So this talk is about deploying ASP.NET apps to the cloud. You already know how to build ASP.NET apps because Matthew's done a great job showing you. And I've shown you a little bit about how to use Web API, so you might have this Web API that you want to put out in the cloud. All right. What we're going to talk about is how you can prepare an ASP.NET site for Windows Azure, or how you can build a new ASP.NET site for Windows Azure. Some different state considerations that you'll want to think about. Then a few advanced topics like DNS and file uploading. Okay. Let's say you want to put your site into Azure. First thing you're going to need to do is to install the tools. And the way you can do that is to do everything all at once, or you can go to windowsazure.com and just install a piece at a time. I would encourage you to do it this way, with WPI, Web Platform Installer. And those are the three things that you really kind of need to be able to do it. And so how many of you have done this, built a cloud project? Okay, I'll kind of go through this real quickly then. Couple cloud steps. You would create a new Azure project. And the first thing it's going to do is it's going to say, okay, well, I'm not just a cloud project on my own. Like, I've got to have some sort of what we call roles. So I've got to have a worker role, which is kind of like a Windows service, but it runs in the cloud. Or I've got to have a web role, which is more like a website. I'm giving you a lot of different options here. You can do MVC 2, 3, or 4. Obviously, we're not ordering them in the order they were released, but, you know, can't be perfect. And then you can do a WCF service web role. So if you wanted to go a little bit lower level, you could do that. Or if you wanted to do SOAP or something like that. And you would click the Add button and add those over. Right. An ASP.NET project turned into a cloud project. Few steps that you have to go through, and I'll show you those steps. You'll add a new project to your solution. So I've got an MVC project over here. Just a normal old plain Jane MVC project. And I'm going to right-click my solution and say Add New Project. Can you guess what type of project we're going to add? We're going to add a cloud project. And then you'll see a roles folder in your cloud project. And you would right-click that and say, new web role project in my solution. And it'll basically give you another dialog and ask you which one. You've only got one, so you would add that one. All right, takes about 5 minutes. All right, what's different between a normal MVC project or a normal ASP.NET project? I keep thinking MVC because it's what's up there, and a cloud ASP.NET project. The first one is, wrong button. First one is, you don't have to do this, but if you want to make use of things that are in Azure, such as Azure Storage, which I'll show you a demo of in just a minute, you have to add references to some of the Azure DLLs. If you want to use the diagnostics in Azure, which I'd highly recommend, you also have to add this block of code to your web config, I believe. You have to add that in there. And that'll basically give you all the logging and diagnostics on the server. Now, there are two approaches for configuration you need to know about. One of those is going to be, obviously, your web config file. Okay? Another one is going to be in your service configuration.cs config file. And that's the file that kind of configures your Azure cloud project. All right. Now, what you'll see me do here is I'm going to actually click on Visual Studio 2010. I can tell you why. Well, I can give you a hint. Visual Studio 11 beta. It's not out there yet. We don't have an Azure project. If we do, Matthew hasn't told me about it yet. And I don't have the default font set up, so I'm going to do a reset settings real quick. Sorry about that. While that's working, I'm just going to point out that you can do two different sets of configuration. You don't have to do it two times. Okay. The idea is if you do your web config, it's just going to be for your website. If you do it for your for the roles, it's going to be out in your Azure storage. It's going to give you a little more flexibility. Obviously, if you want to use one or the other, you have to change the way you read from your configuration data. How many of you have used app settings? So that first block of code should look relatively familiar. Okay. The second block of code, role environment. Role environment is sort of this idea of the box in which your web role is running in Azure. Okay? And when I say box, I'm pretty sure, I mean VM. Like the thing that we load up and throw your website onto. That's the environment on which it's running. And then you can just do get configuration setting value. You'll see that in there I'm just saying my web app setting, and in this one I'm saying my Azure role app setting. Okay? Or you could use both and be flexible. What do I mean by use both? I don't mean at the same time. I mean write your code in a way that you're checking to see if somebody has put their configuration into the Azure configuration or if they're just using normal old web config. Not that there's anything wrong with either or, but it's just nice to have a double check there. Why? Because some developer down the road might go, why do we have some stuff in the web config and some stuff in the Azure config? One of my team members, a guy named Corey Fowler, I think his Twitter handle is Syntax4C or Syntax C4, I can't recall which. Corey wrote a fluent wrapper around this idea so that you can actually read from either one and not have to worry about picking and choosing. It's kind of a neat way of doing things. So, cool. So my settings have been reset. And what I'm going to do here is open up the deploying apps to Windows Azure. And I'm going to show you this web config setting right here. Oh, let me boost my font for you. Sorry. Sorry about that. So you'll see that I have a setting in my web config, my web app setting. And I've got my web project set as my startup project right now. Over here in my controller's code, I've got a couple of different links. Web app setting, Windows Azure setting, and then get message safely. And I'm going to show you what those are going to do. Now, right now I've just got it set on hot project. So whichever project I select is going to be my startup project. Just to show you how this would work, I'm going to set this one. And I want to point out here, I did add the things there, but I'm not going to run this site in Azure out of the gate. I'm going to run it normally, just by itself. Why would I want to do that if it's in an Azure project? Well, ideally, for demonstration purposes, let's demonstrate what will happen here. Secondary to that, one of the pain points is, well, I don't want to run all the other stuff in this project. I just want to run my website and test my website. I don't necessarily want to launch whatever worker roles or other roles that I'm going to have running. I just want to launch my site and test that the last HTML change I made works. I don't want to have the compute emulator spin up. So you can run your site by itself. You won't get some of the cloud resources that you're going to be using, such as cloud configuration, but you can run your site by itself. So right now, this site's running outside of Azure. So what I'll do is I'll click on the web app setting link. You'll see hello from site config. Now I'm going to click the get setting safely, and you'll see that it still says hello from site config. Now I'll click that, and it's going to blow up. And it's going to blow up because this site's not running in the cloud. This site's running in the local web development server. So I'll close that. This time I'm going to set this guy, but before I do, I'm going to go here into roles, and you'll see that this is my Azure project, and I have deploying app MVC apps to Azure right there because that's the web role that I added to this guy. The reason I want to point all this out to you is so you know later on, if you decide that you want to move your app to Azure, you'll know how to do that. You'll basically know, I can add this project and then I can start making use of Azure resources. But I want to show you where the settings is because it is a little bit different. You can actually do it in the dialog. So I clicked on the name of my role in my roles list, and I do that because I might have a worker role in there. I might have a worker role that's hosting a web API that I'm just making calls to. I might not want to host that like directly in IIS or in a web role. I might have it in a worker role. I might have some WCF service hosted in a worker role. Lord knows what all. Okay, could have anything I wanted out there. When I double click on the name of my role, I'm setting up configuration settings just for that particular role. Right now, I've got the cloud project set as my startup project, so I'm going to run it again. It takes just a second longer because it has to spin up the compute emulator, which is like emulating Azure running locally on your home page or on your home computer. And again, I'll do the web app setting. Hello from site config. That is from there. If I do the get setting safely, you're going to see hello from Windows Azure config because I'm reading from the Azure side before I read from the website. Just in this particular example, not for any reason, I just am. And if this time, if I click on get the Azure role setting, it's not going to blow up because it's being hosted in Azure locally, the Azure emulator. Any questions on that? Does that make sense? Just shows you that there's a couple different ways to do configuration in Azure. Okay. Close that down. Moving along. Some state considerations. I'm going to go through these slides sort of quick because everybody's heard about state management before. It's a little bit different in Azure, especially when you talk about AJAX calls. The reason why is you might have multiple roles, or you might have a role running in multiple instances. Let's say you were to up the count to 400 because you know you're going to get a lot of hits. For whatever reason, you're going on sale, and your store knows that they're going to get a lot of hits because you're going on, you know, 80% off sale. So you want to basically boost the number of instances of your site from your normal 5 to 500 because you expect a lot of traffic volume. What's going to happen is your first hit might hit server 2. Your second hit might hit server 42 because all of the instances live behind a load balancer. So I hit the load balancer, I go to my first instance, and I set my session variable equal to 1. I hit my second time, and I set my session variable equal to 2. How many people in here have ever done anything with a web farm? Okay, this is just like that, just like that. Same sort of concern. You have to use the machine key to validate some things, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, what is the value of session foo? Depends on which server I'm asking. So if I make the first hit, and I save the data on the first server, and I make the second hit, bless you, and I try to call the data off the server, it might not be there, just to point that out. Or if I call the server, and I set it to 1, and then he calls the server and sets it to 2, and then I hit server 2, I'm going to get his value back. So you just have to be careful on how you do that. You have to be careful about thinking about that. Okay. Moving on. Solving session state. You could write your own state provider. There's an interface that you can inherit from in .NET, session state provider or something like that, or a class that you can inherit from. And you could write your own implementation that would use SQL Azure or your local SQL Server database. How many of you have had to run out-of-proc session maintenance? So you've used either state server or SQL Server. Same sort of idea. A lot of the Azure team have already written these things, so you can go out and find them. They're in different toolkits. Or you could persist stuff on the client that you need to pull data from the server and just pass that data back and forth. Ultimately, cookies are, you know, does anybody still have a fear of cookies being malicious? Anyone? Good. We're good here. So you could just store the ID or something, an encrypted version of the ID in a cookie, pass the information down, and then use that information on subsequent requests back to the server. But that AJAX slide a couple of slides ago is important because client-side calls, just like server-bound calls, might be calling a different box. So you're not going to want to like load your page up and on the server side while your page is loading, set some session data, and then have an AJAX call make a call back to the server and ask for that session data, because it might be calling a different server. I want to point all that out. Sorry about the animations. Don't forget that temp data relies on the session state provider by default. So if you use the temp data in your code, you're kind of sitting on top of session. People that have coded with me know what my answer to this would be: don't use session. Omit session from your language. How many have already omitted session from their ASP.NET repertoire? What other options do you use? Anybody want to throw out anything else they do? Cookies? Cool. You can use SQL Server as your session state provider or SQL Azure. You have to do a round trip to the database twice per request. You're going to see a decrease in your performance. But since you're running in Azure, you can increase your instance count and offset that. Or if you're having this problem, then you already have an increased instance count. So you're probably already doing that. You can enable session compression, scale that across multiple databases, et cetera, et cetera. And we are competitive and getting more competitive every pricing change on those options. So just remember that. SQL Azure Session State. Again, this is just kind of showing you the same kind of concept, but this time going to SQL Server databases on the back end. Same sort of idea. It'll resolve the partition that it needs to go to. And you kind of go from there. What is the value of foo? Depends on which database you're asking. You have to be careful. Storage providers. We're done with the session state stuff. I just have to talk about that just to let you know that there are some considerations when you're dealing with Azure because you could be hosted on multiple servers. All right. Storage providers are a great topic to start to talk about different things that you can do in Azure that you couldn't do before. Anybody a fan of NoSQL or Lucene or MongoDB or any other form of document type database? Anybody use anything like that? Anybody ever done that? So we're all relational here. It's good to know. What I want to talk about real quickly, and I'll just do a quick demo on these. Open up a different demo project. One is Azure Storage Demos. Oh, that's still in that section. I'm going to skip through that. Go advanced topics, and then introduce you to the different functionality available in storage. And what I'll do here is I'm going to open this up. I'm going to go to windowsazure.com. And I'm going to sign in. Okay. Sign in real quick, and I'll go to manage. We've totally overhauled the Windows Azure website. A lot cleaner, a lot easier to find resources, a lot easier to find downloads and tools to help you with your development. Portal today is in Silverlight. The bandwidth is taking a nosedive today. Has anybody noticed that? This isn't just us, I promise. All right. So now I'm going to go over here to hosted accounts, or if it loads. Sorry. I promise this is definitely the internet connection. What I'll do here is I'm going to open up this storage site. And I'm going to go in here to controllers. And I'm going to show you a couple of different things. I'm going to show you a model. And this model, the task item, we're going to make a task list, and we're going to upload some files to show a couple of different ways that you can use Azure. This is my favorite way of using Azure because it gives me the ability to not be bound to a relational database. Not that I have anything against SQL Server or Oracle or any other products that are out there. They're all great products. But sometimes it just seems like it's too much, you know. If I'm making a small site or I'm working with a startup that's making a small site, they might not need the full power of stored procedures and functions and all that good stuff. So they might want to go with something like table storage. Or if I'm uploading files and I don't want to host all these files on my web server for whatever reason, security, or I don't want to have files on my web server that aren't related to my site, there's a pretty good reason. I want to store them somewhere else. So I can store them in blob storage. So I'm going to introduce you real quickly to table storage and to blob storage, because a bunch of hands went up today when I said, who likes, you know, writing blob data to a SQL Server database? Everybody loves that. So I'll show you a much easier way of doing that. You'll see that this isn't just a plain Jane model. I'm inheriting from another object, table service entity. That's a requirement if you're using table services. And you have to set these three properties. There are some rules around partition key. I've heard a lot of different people have a lot of different opinions about it. If you know that you're not going to have a lot of data, you can just make that static. If you know that you're going to partition the data over, like, let's say, countries or regions, it would be a pretty good idea for you to partition it using stuff like that. And then row key, you want to give it a sort of an identifier and then a timestamp. Okay. And then it's got one real property, details. So what are the details of the task that I'm trying to write back? Okay. Now, what I've done is I've created two generic helper classes. I'm going to just pull those up real quick to show you what they look like. They're not too incredibly complex. Up at the top here, I have a few fields. One of those is going to be the name of the table that I'm storing stuff to. Another is a connection string. That's why I'm loading the Azure storage stuff over on the other side right now. I'm also going to have a storage account and a cloud table client. Those are the objects, basically, that live in Azure. So it's basically the way that you can get to table data in Azure. Consequently, if you want this code, we're going to make this code available later. So if you want to get started without having to know all those ins and outs and just use something like this, like a resource class, you'll have this available to you. But there are documents like crazy on the Windows Azure website on how to do this. Now, in my constructor, what I'm basically doing is I'm using that connection string name. I'm opening up a connection to SQL Azure Storage. And then I'm saying, I want you to tell me if you have a table of type T. So up here, you'll see this T argument. What I'm doing is I'm basically just saying, I want you to tell me if you have a table that stores that type of object. And if you don't, I want you to create it on the fly. So that's all. We're making a lot of assumptions in this constructor, but again, it's good demo code. Oh. All right. I'm also providing a parameterless constructor, and if I use that, it's just going to go against the local storage that runs in the emulator. Okay. Now you'll note that I'm not doing any SQL. I'm just saying table context dot create query of type whatever, and then pass it in a link query, and I get back what I want. When I want to add something, I just do table context dot add object, and if I want to save it, because you can't just do add object without doing save, it kind of creates a batch for you. Then you have to hit save and save everything all at once. And you'll see that I'm returning this from each one. Why do you think I'm doing that? Anybody know that coding construct? Fluent. I'm basically creating a Fluent interface for this class so that I can just chain commands together as I want to. It's not a requirement, definitely not a requirement of Azure. Second thing I'll show you is blob storage. And this is a generic blob source. Again, this is just to kind of get people up and running on storage and blob storage pretty quickly. Concept is the same. I'm going to pass it a connection string, or the name of a connection string. And then, like I've already showed you before, I'm going to go in and I'm going to check the configuration safely. I might be using table storage outside of an Azure role. It might just be a normal website. So I'm just going to give you the ability to load that stuff in right here. Then I'm going to create what's called a container, and that's like a folder. I'll show you that here in a moment. If it doesn't exist, I create it. So I'm basically creating a container in Azure Blob Storage called Uploaded Files. And then I'm going to set the permissions on that to be public. So I'm basically uploading files that I want people to be able to see, and I'm storing them in blob fields. Okay. Scroll down here. Got similar functionality. I want to read all the blobs and get the list of their URLs, because each blob is stored in its own spot, and each blob has its own URI. So when I upload something to SQL Azure Blob Storage, it gives me a URL for that one file. There was a guy at a conference that I attended who wrote, basically, he wrote a website that didn't use HTTP. Everything, except for the REST calls behind the Azure stuff. He wrote a website that he was just putting files in blob storage and then calling the URLs from blob storage and pulling things down. It was pretty interesting. Pretty interesting idea. He did this in Node. And then save to blob storage. Passing in a stream, generally not a good idea, just a helper class, and the file name. So I create a blank string, I upload my blob, and I store it with the file name that was also passed in, and then I upload it from the stream. And what will happen is that blob storage container is going to hand me back a URI for every single file that I upload into blob storage. So once it stores it, it's going to go, hey, I have to give you a URL based on your account name, so I'm going to hand that back to you. Real quickly, I want to go over here, click on that, and then click on storage accounts. All right. The reason I'm going to do that is clear up one little piece of confusion, and that is the connection strings. If you've seen the connection string to a database, you kind of know what a connection string is. You know what it looks like. Server, user, blah, blah, blah. It's not that complicated. The connection strings to talk to Azure resources are slightly different than you're accustomed to. You see that I've got default endpoints protocol is HTTPS, the account name, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm going to have an account key. Here's how you get that information. So here's the current portal, the Silverlight portal, and what I've done is I've clicked on storage accounts over in the left-hand side. I've got one that I put my stuff in called Brady Gaster, and then I've got two other ones, Task List Webcamps Demo 01 and Blob List Webcamps Demo 01. And you'll see over here that I've got a primary access key and a secondary access key. What you would do is you would go to Add Setting. You would change this to Connection String. We'll call it My Connection String. And you would go right here, and you click on this button, and it'll open up this handy-dandy little window. And the first thing it's going to say is, do you want to use the storage emulator? Nah, that's local. No real point to that. My computer is not the cloud. I want it out there so other people can get to it. So I would enter the storage account credentials. So I would type in my storage account, and I would click on this button in the portal. Okay, you see what I'm doing here? I'm in the portal, and I'm in Visual Studio. It's because there are certain keys that you're going to have to get out of the portal that are dynamically generated for you by Azure that you can use in your connection string. So I'll pull that up. And I did that by clicking on the view button right here. And then I would click this button, which copies it. And I would go right here and paste that in. That's how you set up your connection string in Azure. Okay. We don't need that one, so I'm going to get rid of it. But you can see that I've set up two. I've set up blobs and task list. Right. Now what I'll do is I'll open up this MVC project or this MVC controller real quick. And you'll see that what I do is I go to the generic table source class and I give it the connection string of task list, which you saw in my settings file. And then I say get entries, and I'm just saying give me all the entries, passing a lambda expression there, x to true. I want everything. So I could say x, you know, details, includes, whatever string, grocery list, then I'll get back that set instead. And then I just set a view bag property of those tasks. I'm going to do the same thing for blobs. I'm going to say generic blob source, pass it the name of the connection string from my config file, my cloud config file, and then I call get file list. And again, you wouldn't have to do it this way. You could var a new instance of your dynamic of your generic table source and then call the get entries off that guy. I'm a big fan of fluent coding, so I like to chain things together. I'll have run-on sentences in my emails and in my code. So it's just a stylistic thing. And then I return my view. And this guy, this is the new task controller action. You'll see that I create a new item, setting the details property to whatever I'm going to get in my HTTP request. Then I create a new generic table source of type task item. I pass in my connection string name, not the whole connection string. And then I do add and save. Remember, add will just add it to a batch that will be saved later on. You have to call save, and that will send the whole batch up. So you could add, up to 1,000 at a time or something like that. There's limits on the size of the batch, and I can't remember what that limit is. But you have to call save. And then I'm just going to redirect back to the index page. And for new file, I'm going to kind of do the same thing. I'm going to get the first file because I'm only going to let them upload one at a time. I'm going to get the input stream of that file, and I'm going to get the file name, and all I want is the last thing after the slash. I only want the actual file name, wave.png or wave.jpg. Then I declare a new instance of the blob, the generic blob source, give it the connection string name that I want, and call save to blob storage. Now, ideally, I would use something like dependency injection and declare an instance of one of these generic data sources at the time that the app starts and just feed it in using constructor injection to the controllers. I'm not going to do that right now, so you'll see that it'll create them. It might take it a second for each one. But at the end of the day, when I run this, and what I'm going to do here is I'm going to open up two products. That's not one of them. Neither one of these are MS products. One of them is called Table Explorer, and the other one is called Cloud Explorer. And I think the company makes one that kind of blends both together. The name of the company is Clumsy Leaf Software, and a lot of the guys on my team use these tools to kind of do sanity checks to make sure things are legit. Now, in this one, in Table Explorer, what do you think it's going to let me look at? Table storage. And this one, it's going to let me look at blob storage. And you can see that those are the two storage accounts that I have over in my Azure account. You'll see that I have the blob list webcamps demo 01 and the task list webcamps demo 01 listed right there. And when I look at these guys, one of them, the one on the left, Table Explorer is going to give me the ability to explore data in table format, and this one's going to give me the ability to explore my blobs. We use the blob storage ridiculously. It's like out of control. There's actually a thing out there called Blob Share. I'd highly encourage you to take a peek at it. It's like a nice, pretty web front end on top of blob storage. Okay. I'm going to run this guy, and I'm running it in the Azure context. So it should load up pretty quickly. Okay. And do a demo. I'll submit the query. It's going to go out and it's going to create that guy, post it in there, say do another demo. And again, if I had created it as an app level variable, it would be a lot faster. It wouldn't be creating one every single time. So you'll see that we've got data out there. And now what I'll do is I'll refresh the data in my Cloud Explorer, and you'll see there's our data. Now this is data in tabular format stored in this storage account in Azure. All right, that's how that works. I like this because it's kind of a NoSQL approach, sort of a document database approach. I like this. Now, the second part of this, I'm going to browse. I'll go to my pictures. And we got to upload the big waves again. So I'll submit the query, and this could take a second or two longer because we're uploading, you know, a large file up to a blob. So I'll submit that query, and it'll be processing. And while it is, I'll go over here. Oh, it's already done. So I'll go over there. And you'll see that it's going to give me this long URL. That's because that's the name of my account in Azure. If I were to click that, there's our wave. That's our big wave. And then now if I go over here to the Cloud Explorer tool, there's big wave stored up in blob storage. Now that file just got stored in my Windows Azure account blob storage account, which is right here. And you remember how I talked about the container when I actually asked it for a container? That's this guy, uploaded files. Think of it like this. Your blob storage account is C drive, okay? Your containers are all the folders. Now, I believe containers can contain containers, but most people don't do that. But I'll show you an example here. I go up to mine. You'll see that I've got Edbot. That's a series of images taken by a robot, the Eddy robot. Misc, whatever I want, screencasts, stuff I've shared. So these are all these different things that I've stored in blob storage. And it's great. How many of you use Dropbox or the Microsoft version of it? The Live Data or what's it called? Live Mesh, I believe. Or Box.com or whatever. This is sort of like that at a very low level. This is just like that at a very low level. It's just storing all your blobs up in the cloud. And again, those products are Table Explorer and Cloud Explorer. And there's no E on the Explorer. It's just Explorer. So there's that. That's that advanced topic. The DNS advanced topic is one that's been confusing to a lot of people. And what I'll show you is I've got this set of apps up here. And one of them is the Nimble Squid website. Long story. And you'll see that just like all other cloud apps, it's whatever my prefix is, .cloudapp.net. I want to go ahead and click that real quick. And it's just going to be your traditional ASP.NET MVC homepage. Not a big deal. But that doesn't really help me if I want to have brand identity. What if I just want nibblesquid.com? It's going to the same place. It's resolving to the exact same place. And the way you do that is with a series of steps. And I use dnSimple for my DNS management. Not recommending that you use them. They're just really easy to use, and I'm a DNS idiot, so I like to make it as easy as possible on myself. Anybody else use dnSimple? It's a great, great tool. See that I've got three domains in there. This is my wife's currently hosted on WordPress thing. And here's my site, and then there's the nimblesquid.com guy. And what I'll do is I'll go over here to manage, and then I'll click on the advanced editor. And you don't have to use Simple DNS. Oh, you'll see it's the same site. I promise you it's not another site hosted somewhere. It really, really is the same site. So there's DN Simple, and this is what I did. The first thing is I created a CNAME, www.nimblesquid.com, points to whatever it is in Azure. And then I made an alias so that you don't need the www, just nimblesquid.com, and it'll go directly there. So that's how you would basically resolve your stuff back and forth. Okay? I'm back to the deck. The reason you would do that is your IP address might change. Like, we might take some boxes offline, bring them back online. We wouldn't do it in that order. We would copy everything over, bring the box up, and then take your old box down. So you'll know what the IP address is going to be. So just to point that out. All right. You can resolve an IP address. I'm not sure if we allow that, but basically I just showed you using DN Simple how you can set up your own custom DNS addresses for sites hosted in Azure. That's the point. Full IIS. You can choose to go with full IIS rather than using what's called the hosted web core, which is like how we do it in Azure. You can have the IIS level control if you want. Okay. And then multi-tenancy. If you have a SaaS application, and you're going to need to basically allow the ability for one tenant to live in one place and another tenant to live in another place, that's where Azure can really help you out. So I'll point that out. And then web deploy. You can use web deploy to deploy up to Azure. I think it's recommended for development purposes only. I haven't seen it done a whole lot. Usually you use the package feature, which I can show you right now. I won't do it live. I admit that it does take a little bit of time. But what you would do here is you would right-click inside your Azure project, and you would select package. Pick your package. And what that's going to do is it's going to go back and it's going to create a couple of files that you're going to then upload to Azure. Okay, so there's the files. Now what I would do in my Azure account, which I've closed, might take a second to open back up again. Yeah, it's going to take a second. So I'll go over here to hosted services, and I could say I want a new hosted service, and I would give it a name, some demo out there. I'll just say some demo out there dot cloudapp.net. We'll say anywhere Europe. Testing. And you see this package location and configuration file? I'll just show you what I do. I go to my Windows. The Windows Explorer will open up as soon as you do package inside your cloud project. So I actually go in, copy out that file path, and then I click Browse Locally, paste that in, and this one's asking me for the package file. Then I just do the same thing again, and I upload my serviceconfiguration.cloud file. And if I wanted to, I could add a certificate to it, but I'm not going to do that right now. And this probably won't finish before this demo is over because it does take a few seconds for an app to upload. And what you're going to see here is a warning. This is more to protect us than it is to protect you. And what this warning says is, you've got one role, at least one role. In this case, I've only got one role. And you're telling me you want to upload it and only use one instance. If you do that, we're not going to, you know, we can't really guarantee the 99.999999% uptime that we're going to guarantee you until you add it to another server. Again, that's because Azure monitors resources dynamically and automatically. Okay, we'll move servers around. So we'll never move around two of your servers at the same time. So the idea is if you want to have 99 point however many percentages uptime, you want to deploy to at least two instances, so two cores. But I'm going to click yes, I'm fine. and it'll start to upload that guy. So you go to your cloud project, right click it, select package, Explorer opens up, use the Silverlight portal, create your new hosted service, and then you just upload those package files and everything works. File upload. We've talked about this already. We've talked about how you would want to store files in blob storage. Why is this a concern? Because your compute roles have 100 megabytes of root disk space. If you're uploading lots of files or a few really big files, you're going to run out of storage space in that 100 megabytes pretty quickly. So what would we recommend you do? Since you've already got an Azure account, just set up a storage account. Yeah, time's out. I'm done. And file upload solutions, you upload directly to the blob. A couple of takeaways here. You can do ASP.NET apps in Windows Azure. There are some advanced techniques like DNS and storage state maintenance that you need to be concerned about. And that's it. And I can tell you, working on the Azure team, that it is exciting time for Azure. We're adding features all the time, making it easier for stuff to get out there and for you to make use of Azure. And he's probably hinted around at some of the stuff today. So just stay tuned. Soon you'll see some nice stuff from Azure and be able to do more.